From feature story news in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's program, we have the latest on the actions of the National Security Agency.
Fantasy, almost, when we're talking about scooping up information from World of Warcraft, where people take on the caricatures of elves and trolls and wizards and the like.
We look at the purge underway in North Korea as the new leader Kim Jong-un stamps his authority. President Putin's state media shake-up after the nation's largest news agency is closed to usher in a new era of Russian reporting. And also today, as four US presidents head to South Africa for Nelson Mandela's memorial service, we go to LA for a special commemoration to the former leader.
I met him in person. That is history for me, part of my life that I will never forget.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the news headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Over 90 heads of state from around the world and a variety of other distinguished persons are headed to South Africa to attend Tuesday's upcoming memorial tribute to Nelson Mandela, who died last week at the age of 95. Among the attendees will be U.S. President Barack Obama and three former presidents, British Prime Minister David Cameron, and celebrities including Oprah. High security is expected to surround the event in Johannesburg, which will take place in a 90,000-seat stadium, a number not expected to be close to large enough to accommodate the crowd of mourners. Key lawmakers from both chambers of the U.S. Congress appear to be nearing a budget deal for the first time since 2011, according to the Washington Post newspaper. The expectation in Washington was that there would be a huge political battle over federal government spending in the new year. Priscilla Huff has more.
Call it a ceasefire for the political war over government spending. House Budget Chair Paul Ryan, a Republican from Wisconsin, and Senate Budget Chair Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington State, have reportedly gotten most of a compromise deal negotiated. According to the Washington Post, the deal may be most notable for what it does not address. It will not significantly reduce the U.S. federal government's deficit. It will not reform the tax code for corporations. It does not address so-called entitlements, spending on Medicare health insurance and Social Security retirement funding, two programs for senior citizens. It does not even fully repeal the sequester, the automatic budget cuts for federal agencies. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Eight leading technology companies have written an open letter to the U.S. President and members of Congress calling for government surveillance reform. This comes after months of revelations on internet eavesdropping by the U.S. National Security Agency. Lindsay Mastis reports.
The internet giants include AOL, Apple, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, Twitter, and Yahoo. The tech giants have formed a new group called Reform Government Surveillance, in which they ask for sweeping changes to the way the U.S. government collects and analyzes data. The companies want more transparency, oversight and accountability, and restrictions on what government agencies can collect. Concern about internet surveillance goes beyond protecting the privacy of customers. It could affect their bottom line as consumers worldwide question whether U.S. technology products are secure. Lindsay Mastis, California.
And a deal to form the world's largest airline has been signed this Monday. The merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways will form a travel giant larger than the industry's current leader, United Continental Holdings. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. The Kremlin is shutting down its major state-run news agency, the Russian Information Agency. According to a Russian presidential decree, it is being merged with several other media sources to form a new conglomerate. The head of the new agency, appointed by Vladimir Putin, is a Russian TV presenter notorious for his anti-gay and anti-Western statements. Here's Daria Bondarchuk from Moscow.
The head of the Kremlin administration, Sergei Ivanov, told Russian journalists that the move was made to increase the effectiveness and outreach of the state-run media. He added that, quote, Russia pursues an independent policy and robustly defends its national interests. It's not easy to explain that to the world, but we can and must do this. On its English-language website, RIA Novosti noted the move was, quote, the latest in a series of shifts in Russia's news landscape, which appear to point toward a tightening of state control in the already heavily regulated media sector.
American spies have been infiltrating fantasy online games in the hopes of uncovering real-world recruitment, planning, and financing activities by terrorists. Documents provided by NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden indicates that agents have created online personalities in interactive games like World of Warcraft. Daniel Wrenches has more.
The documents provided by Edward Snowden and analyzed by the New York Times and ProPublica indicates that government spies have been concerned about the possible use of World of Warcraft along with Microsoft's Xbox Live and a human fantasy game Second Life. Outside experts are skeptical, saying all players need to provide game operators with credit card and real-world identity information.
And the FARC, leftish guerrilla rebel group in the South American country of Colombia, has announced a 30-day ceasefire. But Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos, said that the government will not consider suspending its military pursuit of the FARC. And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. It's a world inhabited by elves, trolls and orcs. And if the latest from whistleblower Edward Snowden is to be believed, NSA agents. The documents suggest that for several years, both the NSA and British spy agency, the GCHQ, have chosen online video games as a hunting ground for terrorists. US spies created characters to snoop on suspects in the hope of recruiting them or intercepting their communications. Intelligence officials have been convinced that extremists have been using avatars to plan terror attacks and exchange money. Earlier, I spoke to senior fellow and director at the Brookings Center for 21st Century Security and Intelligence in Washington, Peter Singer, who said the news was otherworldly.
Fantasy, almost, when we're talking about scooping up information from World of Warcraft, where people take on the caricatures of elves and trolls and wizards and the like.
And exactly how are the U.S. intelligence services using this forum to better the safety of the American people?
Well, so look, it sounds silly, but there is an element of seriousness behind it. What essentially happened is that you had the rise of these various what are called virtual worlds or online games, and they range from things like World of Warcraft to Second Life, and essentially it's where people take on avatars, some kind of character, and they do everything from play games to trade and the like. And so there was a concern within the intelligence community that somehow terrorists might be using these either to exchange information in a manner not by email, but from people meeting virtually online, or to use it for some kind of training by simulating real-world buildings or maps or the like to go through. And so that was the fear that was driving them. But it reminds me of a quote from LBJ back in the day that we were harboring fears about things that didn't exist, and they were driving us to do things that we didn't have to. LBJ was talking about nukes. In this case, we're talking about, you know, there was a lot of interest in it, and yet it doesn't seem that there was any of this actual use that was feared. And in fact, you know, my joke on this is that for terror groups looking to keep their communications secret, there are far more effective and easier ways to do so than putting on a troll avatar.
This hasn't just been something that the Americans have decided to enter into. The UK went down the Second Life route as well.
Yes, but that's actually very important to understanding not just what happened here, but a lot of the activities that have been disclosed. One of the ways that various governments, including the NSA, would get around certain limitations is that they would do the collecting outside the United States, sometimes by allied agencies, and then they could get the information that they were after, but could be following the letter of the law. And that kind of horse trading also happened within other governments, and it appears that's one of the things that the UK was doing. So, you know, this cooperation isn't just about sharing information. It's ways for bureaucracies to do things that they wouldn't be able to otherwise possible under the law. And that's of concern here beyond just what's going on and, you know, communications between gamers or the like.
Is this a true red face moment for the NSA, or where does this sit in the league of leaked documents from Mr. Snowden?
This is certainly not the one of biggest concern. It's certainly not the most embarrassing. It didn't give away any kind of clear valuable assets. But I think what, you know, really we're seeing here is this just regular drumbeat of disclosures. This one's a little bit silly, but it does illustrate the vast scope of the amount and the kinds of data that was being vacuumed up. And so it's certainly not something that they wanted out there, not because it disclosed any kind of, you know, truly important operation, but it's a good sign of just how far things have gone. And then, of course, the worry within the intelligence community is just when do these revelations stop? It's become regularized, and you know, that's got to be of deep concern to them. This is a kind of news story that they wish wasn't popping up, but even more so, they wish wasn't happening every single week.
Will you be playing World of Warcraft tonight?
If I do, I won't tell you what my avatar is, even if the NSA may know that.
Peter Singer, Senior Fellow and Director at the Brookings Center. This is FSN. North Korea has broadcast images of the uncle of Kim Jong-un being removed from a meeting by uniformed guards, confirming reports of his dismissal. Chang Song-taek was accused by the country's state media of drug abuse, corruption and womanizing. Critics have viewed the move as the new leader's attempt to stamp his authority on the role he inherited from his father. Mr. Chang had long been considered the power behind the throne. Earlier today, Washington correspondent Daniel Renches discussed the purge with Chris Nelson from consulting firm Samuels International.
The uncle and the auntie were perceived right after Kim Jong-il's death as being the senior resident adults. They would be the ones who were in on the joke. They knew how to play the game with the Americans and the Japanese and the South Koreans, and they weren't going to launch some suicidal war by mistake.
And transition the young man from being someone who's wet behind the ears into
exactly
someone who's experienced.
The idea was that they would, you know, if he actually started to believe all the silly speeches that he was giving and chest thumping, that the uncle at least would reach over and say, no, that's great, but let's calm down.
In terms of the relationship with immediate neighbors, right, and with the strongest partner of the DPRK, China, right, what does this mean?
It can't be good news for China, just from looking at what the uncle stood for. He was their friend. We know that within the North Korean system, he at least seemed interested in economic reform along the Chinese lines. He had incurred some wrath of the hardline military guys by advocating a less hardline military. You know, there's such a thing as a softliner in North Korea. On the relative scheme of things, the uncle was more attuned to what the Chinese wanted, which was a less confrontational North Korea, a North Korea that was thinking at least about pursuing real economic reforms in its token. So you have to think that in Beijing today, they are already depressed, and now they're really depressed because they've lost their main go-to guy, and they have to be wondering, what do we do now?
The young man came in, Kim Jong-un, and there were hopes that it would be a less isolationist North Korea. Those hopes are now dashed.
Well, I think, you know, I hate to say we don't know yet, but we don't know yet because it's still not clear, is he going to try these economic reforms that a lot of people tell us are on the drawing board? For Kim Jong-un to do this shows he really feels secure. He actually got knocked off his uncle. He executed two of his uncle's top guys. He orchestrated a absolutely surreal bit of political theater, having the uncle arrested and dragged out, you know, a meeting of the legislature, or Senate committee, whatever it was. And when I saw that, it reminded me of one of the most horrendous things I ever saw about Saddam Hussein. It was a documentary showing fairly early in his dictatorship, Saddam had a National Assembly meeting or something, everybody in the auditorium, all of his top supporters, all the guys who had been with him all along through the coup and everything else. And Saddam was up on the stage. And suddenly in the midst of the proceedings, security police came in and they arrested and dragged out two or three of his most loyal guys, and they were stunned and they were crying and begging for mercy, and you know, and all the other delegates are sitting there watching going, oh my God. Well, Kim Jong-un has just done the same thing in front of everybody. So that shows a leader who is A, absolutely ruthless, B, really in control in the sense that he can get his most extreme wishes carried out. So is that a good thing for reform, or is it scary as hell for all of us who worry about this guy's going to wake up tomorrow and decide, I'm going to liberate the Korean Peninsula tomorrow? You know, could go either way.
There has been a tendency when there's been political change for the North Korean leaders to prove themselves in some military fashion, as you were hinting at.
Well, I think you always, it always has to be a tense time when the North Koreans are not getting what they want. And what they want are negotiations with us that they feel will allow them to legitimize their nuclear weapons program. Well, they're not going to get that out of the Obama administration or whoever succeeds it. So that's got to be frustrating. And we've been seeing reports, seeing the South Korean legislators who declassify all this stuff cheerfully on the floor of the assembly. They've been saying there are signs of activity that could hint at a military style so-called provocation, maybe out along the northern limit line or one of the islands or something. You know, sometimes they do kill a few people to get everybody's attention, and we are a little bit overdue actually for provocation, in quotes. So yeah, there's reasons to worry.
Chris Nelson from Samuels International. Negotiators from the United States and 11 other nations are gathered in Singapore this week to continue to debate a sweeping international free trade deal known as the TPP. The US trade representative has been pushing for an agreement by the end of the year, but two newly leaked documents published by WikiLeaks reveal broad opposition to many of the measures sought by the US, which would largely benefit pharmaceutical giants and other multinational corporations. In Washington, Alice Olstein has more.
It remains unknown which of the 12 participating countries hammering out the Trans-Pacific Partnership leaked the negotiating positions and sticking points of the U.S., Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Mexico, Canada, Malaysia, Chile, Singapore, Peru, Vietnam, and Brunei. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative told the Huffington Post that they cannot confirm the claims made in the document, which show the government aggressively pushing reluctant countries on a number of issues. They said some elements in the documents are outdated and said others are totally inaccurate, but refused to elaborate. Lori Wallach with the public advocacy group Global Trade Watch told reporters at an event Monday morning in D.C. that she's encouraged by the documents, which show the countries are far from agreeing on measures she says would undermine all of our futures.
Sadly, the United States is pushing a really outrageous big pharmaceutical company agenda of patent extensions, data exclusivity, attacks on national health cares, medicine pricing boards, that would really not only deny people in the other countries access to affordable medicines, but also would undermine some of the improvements we've seen in our country recently on trying to get medicine prices down.
But according to the leaked documents, the only ally the U.S. has in that particular push is Japan. Japan is also the sole backer of U.S. efforts to expand what are called investor-state privileges. These measures, which were included in NAFTA and other past trade agreements, allow corporations to sue countries for millions of dollars if a domestic law cuts into their profits.
It's crazy. It wouldn't go to U.S. court. It would go to a tribunal of three private attorneys meeting under UN and World Bank rules, who could then be empowered to raid our treasury.
Other remaining issues of contention include online privacy rules, which all countries except the U.S. have agreed to, several provisions related to protecting biodiversity and curbing climate change, and multiple labor rights standards. But even if the negotiators can resolve their differences on these and other issues, the deal could run into trouble if Congress refuses to grant the president trade promotion authority, otherwise known as fast track. Under that system, Congress gives the executive branch the sole authority to choose trade partners, negotiate, and sign an agreement before lawmakers even get to see the text of the deal. When it does come to Capitol Hill for a vote, Congress is barred from making any amendments or staging a filibuster. Thomas Buffenbarger, president of the Machinists Union, told reporters Monday that this system, used by Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush for several major trade deals, has helped push through many anti-labor policies.
We are painfully aware how fast-track authority in the past has been a precursor to trade agreements with Mexico, Colombia, and South Korea that have wreaked havoc on U.S. Mexican and Colombian workers.
A growing coalition of Congress members, bringing together libertarian-leaning Republicans with progressive Democrats, are also opposed to handing over this power. Nearly half of the 435 members of the House of Representatives have signed letters or voiced their opposition to Fast Track. One letter from mid-November says, quote, "The United States cannot afford another trade agreement that replicates the mistakes of the past. We can and must do better." The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative continues to lobby heavily for Fast Track authority, saying that allowing Congress to make changes to the treaty and having to get those changes approved by the 11 other countries would slow down and possibly derail the whole process. With just a few days left before Congress leaves Washington for the holidays, and with a contentious midterm election season looming in 2014, Wallach and other experts say the likelihood of a Republican-controlled House giving a Democratic president fast-track trade authority is slim. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
Russia's state-run news agency, RIA Novosti, has been closed in a surprise move by President Vladimir Putin. In a move labelled restructuring, the agency will be replaced by a new outfit called Russia Today, headed by Kremlin supporter Dmitry Kiselev, who most recently suggested gay people should be banned from giving blood and their donated organs destroyed. Anti-Putin critics believe RIA Novosti's attempts to produce balanced reporting had not gone down well with some Kremlin officials. Our Moscow correspondent Anya Adayeva spoke to me earlier.
RIA Novosti is the biggest Russian news agency, and it was founded shortly after the end of the World War II. And the decision to merge that agency and Voice of Russia, which is another state-run broadcaster, to merge those two into one is provoking a lot of criticism in Moscow currently, with RIA Novosti making a statement on their website that says, the move is the latest in a series of shifts in Russia's news landscape, which appear to point towards a tightening of state control in the already heavily regulated media sector. Now, that agency, RIA Novosti, no longer exists following Vladimir Putin's decree, and it was perhaps the most liberal of the news agencies in Russia, of the state-run news agencies in Russia, and the journalists working there covered a wide array of issues ranging from opposition protests to corruption cases. Now, what is interesting is that this decision comes just 2 months before Russia will host Winter Olympic Games in Sochi in February, and critics say that this move was done to ensure that there is very little or no state coverage of any opposition protests that may occur during or before the Olympics.
You mentioned Sochi, but I wonder if the events that are still unfolding in Kiev have had any sort of bearing on this decision.
Certainly, this could be a factor, with Kremlin very attentively watching the situation in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin said once that the Orange Revolution, which happened in Ukraine in 2004 against the fraudulent elections there, which overthrew the winner of the election and brought Viktor Yushchenko, the former Ukrainian president, to power. Vladimir Putin called all those events in Ukraine an orange virus, orange infection. And he said that everything possible needs to be done in order to stop the spread of this orange infection in Russia, and this is certainly part of that campaign.
RIA Novosti and Voice of Russia, they're being replaced by an agency which will be called Russia Today. We shouldn't confuse this with the Kremlin-sponsored international broadcaster RT, formerly Russia Today.
That's correct, because Russia Today, the channel, the news channel in English that has been broadcasting for a number of years now and is fully sponsored by the Kremlin, has been renamed to RT, which is short of Russia Today. But this new holding is also called Russia Today. So yes, this is the new name. And Vladimir Putin also made another decision that disappointed a very large part of the journalistic community here. He appointed Dmitry Kiselev, who is a prominent Russian TV personality, as the head of this new media entity. And Mr. Kisilov is widely known for making extremely strong anti-gay comments on television, as well as other comments anti-American, so on and so forth. He said that those gays who propagate homosexuality to teenagers should be banned from donating their blood, and their hearts, should they die in a traffic accident, need to be burned or buried. Now, this man is now heading the biggest state Russian news agency, and this is certainly a very disappointing decision for many here.
FSN's Anya Ardaeva in Moscow. Air Force One took off for South Africa today, carrying President Obama, former President George W. Bush and their wives, where they will attend a memorial service for the late Nelson Mandela. Presidents Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter will also be joining a host of international leaders and dignitaries. Ahead of the event, Nelson Mandela was memorialized at a special religious service at the oldest African church in Los Angeles. Nelson Mandela visited the sanctuary in 1990 during his trip to the city. From Los Angeles, Lindsay Mastis has the story.
The choir was jubilant as they sang religious hymns in honor of Nelson Mandela. On her way into the church, Carolyn Middleton said his legacy will live on.
His legacy is the legacy of hope, even through hard times.
Mandela visited the First African Methodist Episcopal Church in 1990. Members of the congregation that met him say he changed their lives, especially Sega Hoptes, who is originally from East Africa.
I met him in person. That is history for me. Part of my life that I will never forget.
Bishop T. Larry Kirkland Sr. said it was a teachable moment.
I had the privilege of sitting on the stage with him, taking a picture with he and his granddaughter. He demonstrated more love. He demonstrated what Christ talks about, that you should be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. And South Africa and the entire world reap from the life of Nelson Mandela.
During the service, a film about Mandela was shown on the video screens to educate and remind people of his struggle and his gracious heart. Pastor J. Edgar Boyd's sermon focused on Mandela's role as an international leader.
We celebrate his legacy and his involvement in the affairs not only of South Africa, but the affairs of Los Angeles.
Outside, they wrote messages in a condolence book that will be sent to his family. The mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, talked about how the city supported the anti-apartheid movement.
Nelson Mandela showed the power of love and the power of persistence. And Los Angeles was keenly tied to the apartheid fight. We here in Los Angeles, the predecessors of mine, fought to make sure Los Angeles stood up loud and clear against the horrors of apartheid.
Frances McNeely says she cried when she heard the news of his death.
To me, he is like Dr. Martin Luther King. He suffered under apartheid, like blacks in this country suffered under discrimination and racism in the South, and I am originally from the South. And I know what it's like to suffer.
The church is also focusing on its future with the Mandela family. They hosted a service for two of his grandchildren last March before Mandela fell ill. As the Los Angeles community honors Mandela's spirit, people are giving thanks to have lived at a time to see how the historic leader's words changed a nation. Lindsay Mastis, Los Angeles.
And that's the Monday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of the show. Email us, reports@featurestory.com. That's reports@featurestory.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. Coming up on Tuesday, international leaders are in South Africa to pay their respects to Nelson Mandela. That's Tuesday. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with Feature Story News everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.